Good morning. We've been talking about science and creation, how to reconcile the scriptural account with what the scientists conclude. And there are just, lots and lots of different theories and approaches. And my only concern personally is that we recognize that that the scriptures insist, God insists, that we can find, or that God reveals himself through creation. All right, so we can't be afraid to study what's there because we might discover something, bad or misleading. It's from God. So it has to be, true and revelatory of the nature of God, which makes, to me, the study of science a deeply spiritual and Christian thing to do. And just to kind of give you a sense of the irony of things, back in three centuries ago, of course, Galileo, Copernicus, ultimately Newton, demonstrated that we live in a solar system that the sun's in the middle of and the earth goes around the sun. It's not geocentric, it's heliocentric. And so the way people began to view the stars, the planets, the moon, the universe started to change dramatically. Galileo invented the telescope. Wasn't a very good one, but it was good enough to demonstrate that he could see moons going around Jupiter. And that showed that not everything goes around the Earth. And suddenly, the Western mind opened up to other possibilities. And then Newton showed that the mathematics of how the Earth goes around the sun, moon goes around the Earth, it are extremely simple and elegant. And just how, and Newton was deeply Christian, very much a believer, and he saw in the equations and in the motions of the star, of the planets and the sun and the earth, he saw God. And that's how he understood it and explained it. And his point was, because I know God is a rational God and the God who does not change, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever, that I expect that the rules, the laws of nature that govern the motion of the planets to also be the same everywhere and the same yesterday, today, and forever. And then as people got bigger and bigger telescopes, in the 20th century they built really big telescopes. And then at the end of the 20th century we built the Hubble Space Telescope and other outer space platforms. It over the years became clear that the universe is really, really big. That wasn't obvious 150 years ago. But you start looking and you see galaxies out there and all sorts of things. The question became, in the scientific community, well, just how big is the universe and how does it work? Because for the longest time it was assumed what you might call, what was called the steady state theory. Steady state just says, it's kind of the way it's always been and will always be. So if I look out into the sky and I see a galaxy 10 million light years away, or 10 billion light years away, whatever, that's how far away God made it, and that's how far away it's going to be, and that's how far away it will be forever. But it didn't take long to realize, once you discover the law of gravity, right, that all the galaxies and stars are pulling on each other, so the natural tendency is for everything to clump back together again, because everything attracts everything else. So leave it alone, it's going to draw. So I don't know, this is, they realize mathematically if the universe is finite, if there are boundaries around it, then it's got a center. And if it's got a center, then gravity pulls everything toward the center, and it can't last forever. Not possible. Einstein put forth the general theory of relativity, early 20th century, and under his equations, the universe showed itself to not be infinite, but finite. The only way the universe can be constant and never change is if it's infinite. That's the only way for gravity to be equal in all directions. If it's finite, then gravity is always going to be centered toward the middle. If it's infinite and in uniform in density, then it can last forever. But Einstein showed that's not possible theoretically. And then when the telescopes got to be pretty good in the early 20th century, they realized that the further away objects were, the faster they were going away from us. That the universe was, in fact, expanding, which was a little bit of a surprise. So, you know, if we're here and we've got a star, they don't really have 5 points, but that's how I draw them. And this star is twice as far from us as this star. And if this star is going one speed, the one twice as far away is going twice as far fast away from us. It's like if you painted stars on a balloon and blew the balloon up, everything would be getting further and further away from each other. And something that's twice as far away would be getting further away twice as fast. Okay? That's the image they like to use. This makes sense. And that's what was observed in the early 20th century. So the three theories, when I was a kid, this was taught in school. There were three theories of how the universe might be. One, steady state, which is clearly not the case. The next one is that it oscillates. And this was very popular for a while. The idea was that it goes out, gravity pulls it in, it all clumps together like into one gigantic star, and then because of the pressure and the heat of everything lumping together, it blows up, goes back out, and we have infinite oscillations of the universe. Right? And then you got the Big Bang, which is it blows up, but just once. Right? In the scientific community, they did not like the Big Bang theory. Why not, do you reckon? Why would it be unpopular among astronomers and cosmologists to suggest that it blew up just once? Well, that's pretty close, I think. I mean, the problem is that to a scientist, this sounds too much like Genesis 1. To an atheistic scientist, not all scientists, of course, because it proposes creation from nothing. And it leaves open the question, well, where did the Big Bang come from? If you want a universe that is 100% science and totally determined by mathematics and physics and astronomy prove and demonstrate and sufficiently describe everything, Big Bang doesn't fit that so well. So they like the oscillating theory. For the longest time, that was something people mathematically played with, did theory work on. The trouble is, I think much to everyone's surprise, when they got into doing the physics of subatomic matter, quantum physics, electrons, protons, neutrons, quarks, those kind of things, and they built these accelerators that test how they act at really high speeds and really high temperatures, they discovered that if you were to have a universe-size ball of matter and gravity were to draw it all together, that the gravitational force would greatly overwhelm all the atomic forces that make atoms hold together as atoms, and it would collapse. And there's no limit to how much it would collapse. That if the universe were to all draw back together again, it would just disappear. Everything would cancel each other. There'd be nothing to hold it together. Okay? So it can't oscillate because there's no place for it to go to in between oscillations. Now, there are other reasons that that theory's been rejected. And then an amazing thing happened regarding the Big Bang theory, which is Einstein wrote the equations. Shortly after that, somebody said, you know, if this is true, one solution to the equation, it doesn't have to be the way it was, but one way it could be is there was this Big Bang and all. And if that were the case, then shortly after the creation, you would have an intense burst of energy within a very small universe, right? I mean, like smaller than the tip of your finger small, very small. Because it goes to zero, right? So at one point it was the size of a pinhead. And then if that were to happen, you'd have this incredible intense energy made up of photons. And then you can run the math and say, all right, well, it has now expanded to its present size. And if you have a universe filled with light waves that's, you know, this big, size of my, you know, two and a half feet, you then expand it to universe size, the waves of light as the universe stretches would also get stretched out. And they would become flatter. And the frequency, which would have been at one point, you know, really rapid, right, get stretched out to become really slow. And you can run the numbers. It's not a very difficult equation, actually. And what they would be today is microwave radiation. And it would be everywhere in the universe. It would fill the universe. And it would be at a particular frequency and density. And it should be extremely uniform no matter what direction you look. Now, when this theory was created, people couldn't detect microwaves. See, they hadn't been in, the detectors had not been invented yet. But in the 1940s and 50s, AT&T needed to be able to convey radio and TV signals and telephone signals around the country, and they built microwave towers. You still see them around today. And they used the microwaves as a means of sending signals over great distances. And the technicians who were building these things noticed that there was always this background noise. And so they pulled out the textbooks and said, oh, this is what was predicted for the Big Bang, Einstein, all that. Write a little paper, publish it, go back to building towers. And nobody took them seriously. And then in the 60s, they built actual microwave detectors and did the experiments and found out these guys were actually right. They won a Nobel Prize like 30 years later. But the prediction of the Big Bang theory that went back for decades before it was even experimentally possible to test proved to be exactly correct. And the scientific community goes, oh, the atheistic element of the scientific community, we don't like this because we now have a problem. We have an unexplained, we have a, you know, we have an event without a cause. Where did it come from? You know, that's going to really make those fundamentalists happy. We don't like that. Meanwhile, the fundamentalists said, we hate the Big Bang. That's a scientific conspiracy to disprove God. So both communities didn't like it, you know, because one problem is perceived from the, you know, among not all Christians, but many Christians, that the problem with the Big Bang theory is it happened too far in the past. Right? So, you know, can't make anybody happy. So, modern observational physics shows the universe is 13.82 billion years old. Hubble telescope, some other these outer space-based telescopes, can look back to almost that far in the past. The interesting thing about telescopes is, since light takes time to travel, doesn't go instantaneously, is when you look at something, a star 10 million light years away, you're looking at it as it existed 10 million years ago. And when you look at something 13 billion light years away, you're looking at how it looked 13 billion years in the past. That's how long it took light to get here. And the more they've looked, the more it has confirmed that the Big Bang Theory explains things best. But there's a weird thing. There are many weird things about cosmology. You've probably heard that Einstein demonstrated, it's been experimentally confirmed, that the faster you go, slower time goes for you. That's been confirmed. They took atomic clocks, set them to be exactly the same, left one on the airport tarmac, put the other one on a jet, flew it around the world, brought it back. The one that had flown around the world went a little bit slower than the one that sat still because it was in motion. Now, we'll spare you why that's true, but it's true. It's because light has to be constant regardless. And the theory says that the universe is made out of four dimensions. There are three spatial dimensions, right? Up and down, left and right, backwards and forwards, X, Y, Z. And then there's a time dimension, which is part of the fabric of space. Which means that at the Big Bang, not only was space created, but so was time. So before the Big Bang, if you could even speak in such terms, right, language begins to fail us, there was no time, which means that God himself exists outside of time, which is a very biblical concept. And it's been taught by Jewish and Christian scholars for millennia that God exists outside of time. Well, the Big Bang Theory gives you the equations to demonstrate that. And that's not a new insight. It's always been true, but now we know it fits with what we observe. So time is a part of the universe that God made. He made time. How that works for God where he lives, I really don't know. You know, what would it be like to exist in a realm without time? Or does he have his own time that somehow runs independently of our time? But don't know. I know a lot of people like to argue about that. Based on what? You know, I think you got to stop. Don't know. But what it does tell us is that God can see the future because he sees the future. Right? He's not predicting the future based on the present. He sees the future because he can see the future. Because he's outside of time. Which is also a profoundly biblical concept. It fits. So the science and the theology really do mesh kind of nicely. The other thing that's less well known and hardly obvious is that time moves more slowly in the presence of mass. So they've actually got atomic clocks so sensitive that you can put one clock on a rack and another one above it 2 meters, so about 7 feet apart, and they'll run at two different speeds because one's closer to the center of the Earth than the other. Now, the difference is teeny tiny, but it's different. You want to live longer, sleep on the top bunk. It'll give you maybe a quarter of a second over a lifetime, you know. But what's the most massive thing you can think of? This is easy. Right, the universe. That's as big as it gets. If you go back to the moment in time when matter first came into existence under the Big Bang Theory, that happened shortly after the universe was created. It started off with incredibly dense energy, but as it got bigger and cooled, it coalesced, and some of what was formed first was what we call quarks. Quarks are what protons and neutrons are made out of. We didn't have quarks when I was in middle school or high school. That came later. We have since found quarks. And quarks are the bricks that make up protons and neutrons. It's what matter is made out of. It's the smallest piece of matter we've been able to put our hands on. And at that time, the universe was smaller than it is today by a factor of 1 times 10 to the 12th power, which is 1 trillion. It was a trillionth smaller. And amazingly enough, the math is really easy. If you were an observer, like maybe God, on the edge of the universe at this moment, time would have moved more slowly for you by a factor of 1 trillion. That's the math. That's Einstein's theory of general relativity, and it's been confirmed in countless ways, and it's just true. So, anybody got a calculator that does scientific notation? No. Oh, come on, please. Actually, you do, you just don't know it. If you have an iPhone, everybody's got it now. I had to pay extra for it when it first came out, but now it's standard. You go to the screen, says calculator, and it looks like this, but you turn it this way, it becomes a scientific notation calculator. Right? So, if we were to divide 13.82 billion by 1 trillion, let's see here. 13.82 two. Here's how you do it. I spent the whole week working on this, you know, 13.82. The little double E symbol gives you the 10 to the whatever power. So 13.82 double E, ninth power, because that's billion, divided by 1 double E, oops, misspelled 1. 1 double E 12. There you go. That's 0.01. Here. This divided by this equals 0.01382. Now this doesn't work. Good thing I brought my own. Years. Right? 0.01382 years. Now, I cannot explain this. Do not come up after class and ask me to. The answer is I don't know. But according to the astronomer who first figured this out, a guy named Gerald Schroeder, who's written several books on the creation and science and astronomy, because there was, shortly after the Big Bang, a period of rapid hyperinflation of the universe, you have to do a 10% adjustment. So, times 1.1. gives you 1.015202 years. How do I get days? Times 365.25. Don't forget the leap year, right? So times 365.25 equals 5.5 days. Eve would have been made maybe midday on Friday. And what better way to mark time than the creation of woman? So from the formation of matter to the formation of the last created being, Eve, according to general theory of relativity and the latest in cosmology, was 5.5 days. So on the sixth day, woman was made. So, I think I'm okay with the Big Bang Theory. I think what we talked about earlier about Genesis 1 being a dedication of the cosmic temple of God, making the universe to be his temple, in which he would place his image, humanity, male and female, and then would himself come to rest in it on the seventh day, or the end of the sixth day, actually. That's true. I think that's good ancient Near East understanding of documents. But I think God's the kind of God that's bigger than that. So that I think he left kind of hints and clues for us to find in there that point out that, yeah, he's paying attention and he understands this stuff too. And so the 6 days just happen to tie to modern cosmology based on general theory of relativity. And there are other things that you can find in Genesis 1 that kind of tie nicely to modern physics. And there have been efforts made, they're not bad efforts, it may actually be true, that you can take a day-age approach from a Big Bang approach and show that each day of the creation fits what happened according to cosmology, science. I don't want to get into all of that. We could do it for 2 semesters. But the most recent understanding, this is from a secular website, not a Christian site at all, about how it happened, is for the first 380 years after the Big Bang, the intense heat from the universe's creation made it essentially too hot for light to shine. Atoms crashed together with enough force to break up into dense, opaque plasma of protons, neutrons, and electrons that scattered light like fog. So there was light, but you couldn't see it. So it was hidden in the darkness of the deep. about 380 years after the Big Bang, matter cooled enough for electrons to combine with nuclei to form neutral atoms. This phase is known as recombination, and the absorption of free electrons caused the universe to become transparent. The light that was unleashed at this time is detectable today in the form of radiation from the cosmic microwave background. God separated the light from the darkness. Now, according to Genesis 1, he did that on day 1. Day 4, he created the sun. That doesn't make sense to the modern scientific. It didn't make sense to the Israelites in the desert 1500 B.C. because they knew day is when the sun is up, night when the sun's down, evening and morning, sunrise, sunset. But yet the account says light and darkness were separated, and then later came the sun and the moon. Well, that's what the science says. You see? In order for there to be light, God had to separate the light from the darkness because the universe started off intensely energetic but with no light that you could see. And then it became visible. So it fits, right? And it fits at multiple levels, read multiple different ways, which are all true. You don't have to say, oh, this is the one correct theory, everybody else is wrong, they're going to hell. No, it's God. He writes it multiple levels and lets different people see different things as he reveals himself continuously through what he wrote a very long time ago, 2,500 years ago. Excuse me, 3,500 years ago. Just enough time. We are blessed to live at a time when in the last, well, since I was in high school, so 40 years, a tremendous amount of new knowledge has been gained about the things that we're made out of, right? Quantum mechanics have gone from pretty elementary when I was in middle school to quite sophisticated today. Astronomy, they've seen much more. Lots of discoveries. The theory's gotten better. The physics have gotten better. Our knowledge of the universe has dramatically expanded in just the last few decades. And for those who are not Christians, the hope was that as we learn more and more about the universe, more and more would be explained until eventually we could explain everything. Now, any good philosopher knows that's impossible, but scientists thought they could explain everything. And in fact, we understand it much better than we used to. We know much more than we used to. But there have been some things discovered in as part of all this that have no explanation in the equations, in the theories, in the observations. They just are. And it is so true and so obviously true that even the most irreligious scientists scratch their heads over it and wonder. It has been said that if you want to find an atheist for university debate, you have to go to the liberal arts division because you're not going to find one among the physicists. Doesn't mean they're Christians. They may be deists, okay? But what we're finding is the universe does not do a very good job of explaining itself. But there's a lot of things about it that just happen to be true that are necessary for life to exist or for the universe to exist. And you could do, there are gazillions of them, and these are just some of the most important ones. When the Big Bang was first happened, and you had this period of inflation, and matter got spread across the universe, if it had been too closely lumped together, it would have all drawn together by gravity and formed, you know, giant stars and giant galaxies, but nothing that could sustain life. Right? If it was too thinly spread, it would just be spread. If it's perfectly uniform, then it would not draw together at all. There had to be some irregularities, but not much. Somebody actually ran the math, and the level of irregularity has to be 1 over 10 to the 25th power. One part in 10 to the 25th. 10 to the 25th is 10 followed by 24 zeros. So it's a trillion, trillion, thousand. It's a thousand, trillion, trillion. There are only about 10 to the 50th atomic atomic particles in the universe, in the sense of how big that is. It's a huge number. I mean, we are not capable, with human technology today, of building a machine to that level of tolerance. I mean, we couldn't even hope to do that. And that's down to the getting it to the right atomic thickness. But if the universe's density had been off by more than that factor, there would be no universe that people could exist in. And you run the math, and there's nothing in the equations or in anybody's theories that made that necessarily happen. It just did. In fact, the hyperinflation that caused the universe to rapidly expand and make all this happen, there is no good explanation for why that happened. It just did. At the beginning, when you E equals mc squared, energy equals matter, when the energy coalesced and formed matter, it formed both matter and antimatter. And it should have been exactly equal, and it should have all canceled back out, and there should be no matter left over, because it's all energy. But there was a slight discrepancy. It's one in a billion, so not that small of a number. 10 to the 9th. But we had to have a difference between matter and antimatter creation equal to exactly one part per billion, so that when we got through, we had enough matter to create stars and planets, and not too much and not too little. And again, there's nothing in the equations that say that's how it has to be. It just happened. The speed at which the universe exploded has to balance the gravity that's pulling it back together. Right? Too much gravity and all collapses. Not enough gravity, it just scatters forever and too far apart for anything to happen. There's a very fine balance that's necessary between the force of the explosion and the gravity that keeps things in balance. The math on that is has to be exactly correct to one part in 10 to the 15th power. And then in the nuclear forces that hold the nucleus of an atom together, their strong forces and weak forces, they have to be balanced and must be exactly correct within one part in 10 to the 16th power. And again, the reason they built the CERN collider in Switzerland to experiment with these things is because theory doesn't tell us what the answer is going to be. You have to experimentally find it. There's no equation that says this is what an electron will weigh, or this is what this force will be. You have to experimentally figure out what that is, because there's nothing in the science that tells us what the answer is. It just is. The electromagnetic force and the gravitational force must also be balanced, or we will not have a universe that we can live in. To one part in 10 to the 40th power. A formerly atheistic philosopher, Paul Davies, excellent writer, makes the point that that is a precision sitting on one side of the universe, which is now, what, about 27 billion light years across, and using an arrow and hitting a nickel on the other side. But if we don't hit it that precisely, no universe for people. And then Roger Penrose, who's one of the guys who discovered, who invented the mathematics of quantum mechanics, says that, and don't ask me what this means, I don't know, but when the universe was created, there had to be something called phase space. Sounds very much like Star Trek.
I know,
but it's true. And the accuracy on that is 1 in 10 to the 123rd power. So that's like if every atom in the universe, really its own universe, it had all that many atoms in it three times. That's how
precise it has to be. And unless you hit all these factors, and there are books that go on for pages of similar factors, but these are the big ones. Unless when the Big Bang happened, evidently at random, so far as science is concerned, unless it rolled the dice and hit all these that exactly, no life. As a result, you know. And there have been many efforts to try to figure a grand unified theory that goes beyond all this and explains all this, and zero progress. There's nothing in the scientific imagination right now that explains how the universe could have been created with such precision. Now, this is not coming from creationist websites. This is coming from the scientific literature. Scientists figured this out, have honestly reported it, and said, we don't know. It's one of the great mysteries of modern science. Except for us. You know, for us, it makes perfect sense, right? I can't think of but one being capable of working at those level of tolerance. You know, because we sure can't. The best that anybody's been able to come with in the scientific world is called the strong anthropic principle. Anthropic. The weak anthropic principle is this. Well, it must have happened because, look, we're here. Which is true. We are here. Pretty sure about that. You know, in the philosophy departments, I'm not so sure they exist, but we do exist. And so, yes, it did happen, but that doesn't tell us how it happened or why it happened, right? The so-called strong anthropic principle is, well, it must have happened 25 times 9 times 15 times 16 times 4, yeah. That many, many times until the dice happened to hit. So the universe has been created. It's called the multiverse theory. But there's so many universes out there that eventually it's inevitable that one would happen where we could exist and therefore we do exist. But the scientific evidence for this faith claim is zero. Right? And in fact, the more you think about it, the more absurd it becomes, because you have to have essentially an infinite number of dice rolls. There has to be something that exists to roll the dice. There have to be laws of nature existing outside of nature to make it possible for something to pop into existence, right? Because the theory is we started literally from nothing and then a random fluctuation occurred and it became a universe and blew up and became us. So there has to be some existing other thing out there that's so big that it could roll the dice an eternal number of times and at one point get lucky and get us. Which I don't think makes much sense. It is not science because there's no evidence for it, right? It's an untestable hypothesis. There's nothing about it explanatory. That's just, to me, a desperate claim, but it is the claim made. If you want to take an atheistic view of the universe, you have to assume there's a universe in which our universe exists that is constantly rolling dice with the physical constants and having one Big Bang after another, hoping one of them will one day create humanity. And why it exists and what its purpose is and how it works is unknowable and will never be known. And we're, again, back to we're random events in the cosmos, and there is no value, there are no good, there is no bad. There's nothing about us that's special or purposeful. It's a very bleak worldview. And goes against every intuition in us. I mean, there's something in us, in every human being that says, no, when you're talking about odd like that, there's a creator, right? We can debate whether it's the God of the Bible or some other God, or you know, but something comes from somewhere. And as a result, we're constantly finding, and Paul Davies is a great example. Paul Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S, written a series of books. He's a philosopher of science and a scientist who wrestles with these issues and says, I was an atheist, but I can't look at the evidence that's coming from the scientific community and deny that there's a creator. Now, he's more of a deist than a Christian, okay? But he believes there has to be something out there, because to say this happened at random is absurd. And literally, it's possible in quantum mechanics to run the odds of, what are the odds if I were to punch my fist to this table, my hand would go all the way through, come back out, and the table would reform? Not very likely. It wouldn't happen in 100 billion universes. But it is possible that every atomic particle happens to align in such a way that I could do that. And if you had an infinite number of universes, it would happen, because it's possible. But we are rational beings, and none of us is going to punch our fist through the table assuming it's going to go through, right? Because the odds are ridiculously long, and it would be a stupid thing. And, you know, these odds are much less likely. It's more likely that I could walk through that wall than that this happened at random. So when you have those kinds of odds, you deal with, well, it's really impossible. And when it becomes impossible to happen naturally, then it has to have happened supernaturally. So when I read this, study this, learn about this, I see God. I think God reveals himself in the math. See you next week.